guys next week. Bye.
Until September 22nd, it's Funding Drive time here at CJLO 6090 AM. CJLO has been supporting the Concordia and Montreal communities for 20 years, and now we need your support. There are lots of ways to do this. You can listen to CJLO to pledge your support by calling 514-848-7471. Or you can visit cjlofundingdrive.com to donate online and receive our new Funding Drive merchandise. You can also buy raffle tickets from one of our CJLO DJs to be entered in to win one of over 200 fabulous prizes from our sponsors. CJLO 6090 AM, from the underground to the airwaves.
CJLO News, I'm Harley Martin. Quebec is relaxing regulations around deer hunting in western Quebec. It's the latest attempt to curb the spread of chronic wasting disease, which affects the central nervous system of deer and has been found in several provinces, including Quebec. New rules allow for hunting of both sexes of deer, with no regulations around firearm standards. Officials hope the relaxed rules will result in more samples from game hunters. An Ontario First Nation is expected to have their 2-decades-long boil water advisory lifted. Shoal Lake 40 First Nation sits west of the Manitoba border, 2 hours east of Winnipeg. The community celebrated the unveiling of a finalized plan for the $30 million treatment plant on Friday. Students from across Hong Kong have formed human chains in the streets to support anti-government protesters. 1,300 people have been arrested following continued protests over the weekend, which began months ago in response to a Chinese bill which would extradite people facing criminal charges from Hong Kong to the mainland. Many saw the bill as a compromise to Hong Kong sovereignty, and while the bill has since been withdrawn, anti-government protests have continued. To hear the newscast or learn more about the news team, visit cjlo.com/news.
Talento, fortuna, esperienza, impegno, costanza, coerenza. Tra genio e follia c'è poca differenza. Hanno lo stesso punto di partenza. Ma se sei solo e ti perdi e non va come vorresti tu, non c'è un navigatore né un tutorial su YouTube. È bello se ti riconoscono, è bello se vai in TV, ma è meno bello quando sei tu che non ti riconosci più. Tutto è più facile visto dagli occhi degli altri, perché quando non sei tu che piangi, gli occhi sono meno rossi e meno grandi. Se vinci ti vogliono bene, ti fanno la ola, ti cantano un coro. La vittoria è una cosa di squadra, ma se perdi, perdi da solo. Per ogni ballerina che ha male i piedi e si medica, per ogni calciatore che risparmia per le scarpe nuove, ogni studente che non mangia si dimentica, o musicista che anche da stanco va in sala prove, per ogni sportivo, artista, regista, scrittore, fotografo, astronauta, cantante o disegnatore, se c'è riuscito uno possiamo farlo tutti, il tuo sudore, la tua occasione, che fai, la butti?
Nulla è impossibile se credi in quello che fai.
Se credi in quello che fai.
Chi ci crede chi è che ha fede è chi riesce a vincere anche senza te. Nulla è impossibile.
Back from international break. We're back here on the Calcio Guys on CGO 6090 with Adriano DiNardo, Gianni Del Colli. I'm Nicholas DiGiovanni. How you guys doing?
Not too bad, not too bad. Yourself?
Pretty good.
Yeah, this week we actually had a common team to cheer for. For once.
I'm actually shocked and surprised.
Yep.
Unlike weeks past or pretty much the rest of the season. Just to let you guys know, it is a CGO funding drive from today, or I think it started yesterday, sorry, until September 22nd. For our listeners that don't know, CJLO is based off community funding. It supports the community. It's an underground radio station here at Concordia University of Montreal that needs your support. Every year we ask our listeners to help us out a bit, because it gives us the opportunity here on the Calcio Guys to do what we do, to talk about Calcio, to share our passion, to for Adriano to rant about Milan or go nuts over a Piontek
it's
goal.
It's therapeutic for Adriano, that's what it is.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And so if you're from Montreal, there is going to be a raffle. Draw is on September 23rd. Tickets are one for $3, two for $5, or five for $10. You could contact us on Twitter, Instagram. If you know our Facebook, on Facebook. Twitter, The Calcio Guys. Instagram, The Calcio Guys.
Facebook, The Calcio Guys.
Pretty official.
Official.
You could contact us, our personal.
Well, we had somebody made a parody account about us. That's why we had to put official.
Yeah, we got famous like real quick.
Oh, wow.
Raffle, the prizes for the raffle include a Via Rail trip.
Ooh.
North Face gear.
Ooh.
Food, gift cards, gym gift cards, gym membership, sorry.
You had me at food.
So if you'd like to support us that way through the raffle, if you're from Montreal, that would be great. Or you could head to cglofundingdrive.com. We're going to have Rocco Fazzone, Fazzano on later. Sorry about that. To talk about the Italian national team and Juventus. But, I mean, hey, good weekend for Italy. Seven wins out of in the past seven. I think everyone's pretty happy.
I think it was six out of six.
Well, six out of six in the Euro qualifiers. Seven out of seven in the past seven games. So that goes back to last November against USA.
Yeah.
They haven't lost a game a year ago today, actually, against Portugal.
Yeah.
So Mancini's doing a good job.
I think he's doing a good job, but I don't know. There's still things to work out. I mean, we saw two games that were, I mean, we got the win, so we're obviously happy. But, I mean, I think there's still, you know, kinks to work out. I still think it's an attacking issue when you speak about Italy. Yes, you know, we got the goals, a couple goals, and yes, we got the win. But I don't know. We got the build-up, but we don't got the finish, I still think. So I think that's still a key point to stress. You know, good on Belotti getting in there, getting his goals, playing a good first game against Armenia. And then another great performance by Immobile in the second one. Finally getting his first goal with the Italian national team after 2 years, two long years, actually, I should say. So for that, I mean, you know, it's exciting times, but I still think we could have put a lot more past. We had a lot more opportunities than the scoreline showed. So it could have been, you know, 4-5 one or 4-5 nothing. So, I mean, for me, it was good games, you know, positive, but I still think there's things to work on.
I'm on the other side of the fence. I think the issue actually wasn't our offense. I think our issue was our defense. Even though we did win the games, they were extremely sloppy, and there was a lot of mistakes that were kind of scary to watch if we played against threatening teams. Mind you, our group is not the hardest group to play in, so we didn't get punished on the mistakes that we did. But you do this against a top-flight team, a top-flight European team, let's say against Germany, for example, or France, or Spain, or Portugal, or England, or pretty much, I'm just going down the list here, but you do that against them, and they're going to capitalize on those mistakes, and they're going to pay hard for it, Italy. So I think, for me, I was happy with the offense. I was actually scared about the defense.
What do you mean Armenia is not a top-flight team? Henrik Mkhitaryan, he's a superstar. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. He plays for AS Roma now.
But this is what the 3-1 win against Armenia sounded like.
Now Barseghian to lead them forward, and Carapetian to try his luck, and Donnarumma is beaten. Alexandra Carapetian has done it again. Emerson looking to pick the pass for Andrea Belotti. Italy silenced the crowd, and Belotti has done just what was required of him. Here goes Bernardeschi. Oh, and Bernardeschi to cut inside. Oh, now did he jump with his arm? And Alexander Carapetian has been sent off right at the end. And that's fired in! And Pellegrini has come off the bench to put Italy in front. They keep finding unlikely heroes. Here's Belotti. Done well to turn! And Italy have a third, squeezed in at the near post for his second of the game.
So obviously Italy, it was tied until about the 76th minute, I believe, when Pellegrini scored against a 10-man Armenia team.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I felt a bit nervous watching it. I know me and Adriano were watching it together, and there were moments in the second half you just thought, what's wrong with this team? Why can't they finish, you know? I knew they weren't going to lose, just put it that way. You know, it was worrying that they weren't going to go home with the 3 points, that's for sure. Especially after Carapetian's opening goal, it was just like, okay, what are we doing in Armenia? Down one.
I feel like as if it was just the overall effort of the team. They looked in bad form. I don't know how to explain it. Bernadeschi looked off. The goal that Karapetyan scored, Romagnoli lost his man. He's normally good, so I don't know if Romagnoli was just having an off game or give credit to Karapetyan for just like bursting through him, but it's very uncharacteristic that he got past a guy like Romagnoli and he got the ball and he put it back in the back of the net. Bonucci tried his best to get back to help him out, but unfortunately wasn't able to make it. Chiesa was also in bad form, and I feel like as if the sluggish start was due to Italy just not being at the top of their game. So it was nerve-wracking a bit at first, because you expect a better effort from your team, especially when it's a game that you expect to get the win from, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, I guess it's PTSD from the whole Ventura days, where it's like, oh my god, are they going to play for the draw now?
And he who must not be named
ever.
You know, it starts with a V as well, like Voldemort. So just Ventura, Voldemort's the same thing.
Combining Calcio and Harry Potter, yeah. Brought to you by Gianni Delacalli.
But overall, I just wanted to mention that I feel like as if Italy now has like this play to win mentality. Every time they go down, they still try their best to pour on the offense and not only just get the tying goal, but also get a game winning goal.
I agree. I mean, as you said, when we went down 1-0, it's like, oh, here we go again kind of moment. And as Nick said, I mean, I was hoping that they were not going to lose. The draw was worrisome for me as well. But I mean, after going down 1-0 in Armenia, I'm like, you know, this can't happen again. So I was like trying to be positive, but it was hard. When Armenia went down to 10 men and we saw Italy's play, me and Nicholas, I mean, it was like, are you serious? Like, they didn't have any sort of opportunities, any sort of chances that were dangerous. And Armenia was playing with 10 men. So that was worrisome for me as well. Finally, they got the breakthrough and finally they got the winner, you know, to win the game there. But I still think there are some things that need to be worked out. For me, it's offensively too. But I mean, I could see your point on the defense as well. So I was happy, you know, obviously they got the win, but definitely need some work.
Midfield looked good.
Yeah, they looked all right.
On Friday, it was Verratti, Jorginho, and Barella.
Yeah.
I mean, Verratti didn't play against Finland, but obviously because he was suspended.
Yeah.
Since he came in, I found he changed the game against Armenia. He definitely...
Yeah, I mean, in the Armenia game, I remember there was times where it was like, it was worrisome because the midfield is good and it did play great, but there was times where, you know, there's certain Armenian players just going through our team like it was like we were like amateurs. It scared me a bit, but I think we've kind of now accepted the fact that we have a certain core of a midfield, and I think we can put our confidence in them, and they're young, you know, they're vibrant, they're electric. So I think it's a positive sign. I just, you know, if they can continue on this path and continue to be cohesive, I think, you know, we'll be able to compete definitely in the midfield against, you know, any top nation.
What did you think about Kevin Lasagna coming on for, I forget if it was either Bernadeschi or Chiesa?
Personally, I don't know.
It was a winger for a striker.
I think it was Chiesa because I think Pellegrini came on for Bernadeschi.
It's possible. I forget who it was.
I have to double check that. I'm drawing a blank on. I mean, it just, like I said, Chiesa was having a bad game. Nothing was working out for him. You know how he likes to go on the right side. He's very aggressive, head down, but kind of, I don't know how to say it, like fast pace. Like, he doesn't take his time to think about the passing option or the shooting option. He really gets aggressively. Yeah, you have the correction.
Yeah, so Lasagna came on for Bernadeschi and Pellegrini came on for Chiesa.
Oh, okay. So I had the inverse. My bad.
No problem.
But they needed a shake up front because some things weren't connecting well. And it, as you can see, like the assist for the goal scorers all came from the wingers. From the left back and the right back, or from the defense. Essentially, the wingers themselves weren't working out too well. So
yeah,
I don't blame the change. And like I said, I guess it was just a bad game for them because you could tell from the way they were playing, it wasn't their best effort.
No,
without Lorenzo and Sidney, they looked really thin at the winger position. You know, they had Bernadeschi and Chiesa, and then Pellegrini was coming on for them.
I don't know why, like, El Shaarawy didn't get a nod over there. I mean, the Lasagna substitution, I mean, yes, it was late in the game. It was about, what, the 83rd minute. I just don't find he's the guy that is going to bring any type of spark. Yes, like, you know, he can score, you know, he can get in there and do his job. He's a, you know, he's a big target man type of striker, but I just don't think he's the type to, you know, to bring a spark and to bring some sort of presence up front.
Coming up next on the Calcio Guys on CJO 6090, Finland versus Italy.
Did you make some bad decisions on a Tuesday night? Join me, Sarah, as I hold your hair back, give you a glass of water, and feed your hangover blues with a mix of indie, post-punk, and R&B. Bleach your hair, text your ex, wear your sunglasses inside every Wednesday at 12 p.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM.
I can see the future will be.
Looking for a way to beat the heat this summer? Have you heard of Kalem Creamery? They offer traditional and Asian-inspired fun ice cream flavors and fresh soft serve swirls that change weekly. They even have an Instagram-worthy black ice cream. Do you dare try it? Our friendliest staff will let you sample anything your heart desires. Located next to Concordia's Loyola campus in NDG, Kalem, rain or shine, it's always ice cream time.
CJLO 1690 AM's annual funding drive is taking place from Monday, September 9th to Sunday, September 22nd. From our many killer events, our fresh new merchandise, and our top-notch raffle prizes, there is sure to be something for everyone. And it's all going to a good cause, supporting local community radio. Visit cjlofundingdrive.com for more information and to find out about our events, our raffle prizes, and how you can donate. And as always, keep it locked to CJLO 1690 AM.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
From Chiesa, great reaction, Ciro Immobile for Italy, and it is a priceless goal. Teemu Pukki, massive goal for Finland. Oh, it falls through to Barella, now they're appealing for a hand, and Bobby Madden points to the spot again, and it's a crucial one, and it's slotted home by Jorginho.
A gutless comeback effort. Well, comeback in some ways. I mean, it was tied. Italy came back and scored, if you want to put it that way. Mm-hmm. Between Finland and Italy, you're listening to the Calcio Guys on CJLO 1690. CJLO, by the way, is hosting its funding drive from now until September 22nd. Head to cjlofundingdrive.com to find out how to donate. Looking at this team, Italy, the way they played against Finland versus how they played against Armenia, as we just spoke about, I found there was a lot more positives. They had a lot more scoring chances. Yeah. Immobile scored after 2 years with the national team. Mm-hmm. He said it himself. It was a relief.
Yeah. It's fun. It's always nice to get the monkey off your back, so to speak. I think he made a comment something like that where there was something wrapped around his neck or something for the longest time, and now it finally let go. It was a weaker lineup, so to speak, but
quite a few changes actually.
Yeah, some that I didn't really understand.
Yeah, but they still somehow played better than they did against Armenia, and they scored one less goal. But Sensi had a phenomenal game. He had some amazing chances. He was great offensively. So I find he's more like an offensive Verratti, if I can make that comparison. They're both small players, but Verratti knows how to, I guess, control the ball a bit more, whereas Sensi just goes all in. One thing, though, that I do want to criticize, though, is the way the defense and Donnarumma play around with the ball a bit. You can tell that, I guess, they were a little bit slightly inexperienced because there was these dangerous passes that if they were 1 inch to the left or 1 inch to the right, let's say, a Finnish player would have picked the ball up easily and had a point-blank scoring chance, you know? Donnarumma has this tendency to likes to play around the ball with his feet a lot, but he doesn't do it gracefully, I guess you can say. It scares you a bit. It scares you a bit because it cuts it close. That's one thing, though, I do want to criticize about what they did that game.
Imagine how the Milan fan feels about that when he has to watch that every game.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has improved a bit. Last year was abysmal. Never going to forget the Sampdoria game. But I think he's improved a bit. Yes, I mean, I don't understand why they put themselves in those situations to begin with. Again, against a better team, that's probably in the back of the net. And, we're crying on the other end. So for me, the defense, looked good. The guy's out of position, I guess you can say, with Itso playing more of the right back role and Pellegrini up top. I didn't really understand that at all. I think he needs to be more in the midfield. Yes, he's a bit more creative and he can score as well, but I didn't really like that. On the flip side, Itso at right back, I mean, yes, it's not natural, but I think he played a good game. I think he actually looked pretty natural in that position. So for that, I'll give a thumbs up. Again, I'm happy for Immobile getting the goal. As you said, monkey off the back after 2 years. I think he deserves it for the performance he's been putting in for Lazio. Not translating to the Italian national team was worrisome, but to finally get him going, I think it's only a confidence booster. So for that, I'm happy. But I don't know, man. The penalties that were given in that game. I mean, I don't know. The Pukki one, I didn't really understand. I mean, who touched him?
Sensi. Who? It was. There was contact for sure.
I don't know.
It wasn't a lot.
I don't know about
that. There was contact, but just enough to push him down. And then the handball was.
That was. They were both. For me, they're both 50-50. 50-50.
But then if you're going to give it one way, you're going to give it the other, right? So.
I think so.
I don't have a problem with either, especially the handball with the new handball rule where if it touched any part of your arm, when your arm is in an unnatural position, it's given. There's no gray area, I find. Just move on. There wasn't VAR anyways. It was whatever the referee saw the spot. So.
I know. With VAR, I think it would have been a whole different ball game. I think, but
you would have been angry.
No, but I just don't think. I don't know. Personally, I don't think they were for me. They were soft calls both ways. So I don't know. That's just the way I saw it.
One thing though, that in relation to the penalty shot itself, I have a lot to criticize on Jorginho this game. Just because that penalty that he took. He telegraphed his shot so much. He was going in with his right foot. He angled his right foot to put in the right corner. Like that PK itself, I don't know. It's like you just might as well just shout out, "I'm putting it bottom right," as a goal. And the goalie almost got it too.
Yeah.
It was thankfully the speed of the shot was enough to beat the keeper, but the keeper himself read that kick and he knew it was going right. Left. It was with his right foot going left. But either way, thankfully it went in. But Jorginho himself, especially that yellow card that he got, where it was a very sloppy tackle from behind during the game there, he's got to play better. Because going forward, we know that, let's put it bluntly, he's a staple on the Italian midfield. Guaranteed. He's always going to get a start, right? And if you're going to be that kind of player that we need to depend on, you need to play better. You can't be sloppy like that. And yes, you scored a penalty shot. Yeah, great for you. I'm happy for you. I love Jorginho. But he telegraphed that so much. And it was scary because I'm like, that was almost a no goal. That was almost a save right there.
Yeah.
He also had the Sutter step, which...
Which he does all the time, I've noticed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him take enough penalties.
I think at Chelsea, he was doing that.
At least he knows what he's doing. At least he scored.
Yeah, that's what counts.
Napoli wasn't doing much either because they always gave penalty shots to Insigne.
That's it, so...
So yellow card, red card. You guys want to give... I know there was pretty much only two games for Italy. I know there was a bunch of other games around UEFA in the qualifiers. I can't say I watched any of them. I mean, all I know is that the Netherlands beat Germany. In Germany.
My yellow card, just from my rant before, is going to go to Jorginho for all the reasons that I mentioned before. Not because he's a bad player. It's because he's a great player that played horribly. And when you have expectations of your great players to deliver, he unfortunately did not. So he didn't do horribly. He did score when we needed him to score, but he needs to be better. So I give him a yellow card.
Yellow card here.
Adriano?
No, you go.
Okay, I'll go. I'm going to give a small yellow card. More even just a foul to Roberto Mancini for not playing Alshowarwi at all in the two games. He obviously had a big season last year. Okay, yeah, he is playing in China now against lesser competition, but the way the wingers were thin this weekend without Insigne, Even Vincenzo Grifo, he got called up. He didn't play. I would have liked to see those guys play a bit more instead of Pellegrino. Pellegrini did do a good job, but to play pretty much both games, it was a bit excessive. So I'm giving a small yellow card to Mancini.
This is definitely going to be another yellow.
So, yeah, for me, I'm going to go to that Armenia game. As I said briefly before, I'm going to give my yellow card to Italy's, I guess, reaction after Armenia went down to 10 men. I mentioned it before. It was still worrisome for me. I didn't think they were dangerous at all. They didn't really want to capitalize, it seemed like. Yes, they end up getting, you know, the goals afterwards, but just how they were playing, it looked like as if it was 11-on-11 for me personally when we were watching it together. So for me, that is worrisome because, as Johnny mentioned before, against a tougher team, against a better nation, you know, no knock to Armenia, but you'll get dominated, you'll get counterattacked, you'll get scored on. So for me, their reaction after going up a man, you know, gives merits a bit of a yellow card.
And he now sees a flash of yellow before his eyes.
MVP of the two matches?
That's a tough one.
I'll start it.
Go for it. I guess, go ahead.
I'll give it to Belotti. You know, he only did get one goal, should have been credited with a second, got a lucky bounce.
It was
own goal given to the Armenian goalie.
Was that official after?
Yeah.
We were mentioning before. It was official?
Official own goal. But regardless, he looks a lot better. Mm-hmm. He's able to hold up the play now. He's not just your kind of serve and volley, I guess you could say, type of striker where they're just going to cross it into him and he's going to score. He's a lot more creative, I find. He's a bit different than Immobile now. Before, I found they were very similar players, and Belotti's really shown, especially under Mazzarri at Torino, that he could hold up the play, he could make passes, and he's not just going to be the target man anymore. And I'm excited. If he's going to be Italy's number nine moving forward and the starting striker, I'm excited for that attack, especially with an attack that's going to feature Chiesa, Insigne, maybe Bernardeschi, hopefully El Shaarawy too. But that's why Belotti's got to be my MVP of the week.
I'm probably going to, I know a lot of people give him a flack and for right reasons too, but I'm probably going to give my MVP of the week to Bonucci. I know a lot of people
shut off your mic
again.
A lot of people usually give him like a lot of like criticism and whatnot, but he had a great game, like both games. So the Armenia game, it was him who got the assist on the Pellegrini goal, correct? Is that what we established?
Yeah.
So he got the assist in that game. The Finland game, he cleaned up so much for defensive mistakes. There was times where Finland had a dangerous chance going, and he was there to kind of help mitigate the damages and whatnot, especially when his other wingers and center back. His other center back was Acerbi, no?
Yeah, in the Finland game, yes.
Yes, exactly. So when you have Acerbi, like, even though he's good, he's not the consistent one that's going to play with Bonucci. So Bonucci managed to make up for that lack of chemistry, I guess you can say, for lack of a better term. But Bonucci himself was called upon to be the main leader of the team, and he demonstrated it well both games. So I'm giving my MVP to Bonucci.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go. I mean, I mentioned it a bit before as I didn't really like how he was out of position a bit, but for me, Pellegrini was an impact player. I mean, yes, he came on in the Armenia game, and I think it's like first touch he put in the back of the net. So I think he's a young guy and who can definitely get into the action. Yes, as I said, we already kind of have more or less our core of a midfield with, you know, Brella, Verratti, Jorginho, even Sensi now. But I think Pellegrini can get in there. He can do well. And I mean, I think he's an impact player. So for me, yes, he was out of position in the Finland game. But for me, just overall, I think he can make an impact, and I think he can get on the score sheet. He can create. So he has the whole package with him. So for me, it's going to go to Pellegrini.
It's funny, my yellow card involved criticism against Pellegrini, not necessarily Pellegrini,
it
but
wasn't
more
him.
Mancini.
Exactly, yeah.
And then your MVP of the week is Pellegrini.
Because he shined with what he was given.
Yeah, and so Italy is now perfect through six games, not officially qualified yet.
No.
We can't get ahead of ourselves
until
they have the official qualification.
Yeah.
But that could happen as soon as Greece in a month from now.
Yeah, at the Olimpico.
At the Olimpico, they need 4 points, actually. So if they beat Greece and then I think it's Armenia loses or ties, they're through. But if they win their next two games, they're through too. So
yeah.
Can't get ahead of ourselves. I already saw a lot of people doing that, just saying that that can't happen, especially after what happened 2 years ago.
No, piano, yeah. piano. You can't go. You can't get ahead of yourself. It's perfectly said. And if we get ahead of ourselves, we're gonna be, you know, disappointed in the end, I think. So,
anyways, we're gonna cut to break. On the other side of break, Rocco Fasano is gonna join us to talk about the Nazionale and Juventus here on the Calcio Guys on CJO 1690.
You can listen to the radio and still feel a part of the world. Tune in to Transmission for Post-Punk, Post-Whatever, every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on CJLO 1690 AM or CJLO.com. Radio, live
transmission. You know, I have one simple request, and that is to have sharks with frickin' laser beams attached to their heads. Now, evidently, my cycloptic colleague informs me that that can't be done. Can you remind me what I pay you people for? Honestly, throw me a bone here. What do we have?
CJLO.
Right. Are they ill-tempered?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a start.
Questa mattina per fortuna c'è un'aria diversa, il sole coi suoi raggi penetra dalla finestra. Quanto è bella la mia terra, mi manca quando parto, porto una cartolina di riserva. Questo posto non deve morire, la mia gente non deve partire, il mio accento si deve sentire. La strage dei rifiuti, l'aumento dei tumori, siamo la terra del sole, non la terra dei fuochi. Questa mattina per fortuna la storia è cambiata, vedo la gente che sorride spensierata. Non esiste cattiveria, si sta bene in strada, il mondo si è fermato in questa splendida giornata. E noi onubu, stamattina mi ha scelato su, adoro lo caffè, lo stereo e canzone. A quanto tempo che non stava così, ogni cosa comincia perché vado a fornire. Ma non mi manca niente, stamattina non mi manca niente. Abbraccio a Gabrielino, se dormo un po' pochetto, non saprei problemi, non saprei chi si scemi, non saprei capito, rotto c'è un po' d'avvole. Bacio a mamma mia, già fanno dei fesi.
That's a good little throwback on a Tuesday.
Yep.
Here on the Calcio Guys with Adriano DiNardo, Gianni Del Colli. I'm Nicholas DiGiovanni. That was our theme song last year, New Year No Born by Rocco Hunt. And now we have Rocco Fasano on the line with us. How's it going?
What's happening, guys?
Not much.
Everything's great down here in Toronto. So glad to join you guys to chat Calcio.
Perfect. So you're Catenaccio NA on Twitter. And I mean, I got to ask you, as we do with most of our guests, how did you get into your soccer fandom and your passion for the sport?
Well, for me, I was born in Canada, first off. And I did, however, when I was 7 years old, I returned to Italy with my family. Or I guess we moved to Italy with my family, who was originally from the provincia of Bari, near Bari, in and around surrounding area. And of course, I started to play soccer almost as a pastime, as a hobby, and you know, it would cause a ruckus in the streets playing soccer with my buddies and using rocks as goal posts or garage doors as nets. So that's how my love for the game started. Of course, you know, I would collect Panini adhesives to put them in those albums that they collectors that they used to collect the adhesives in, and you know, would just, as opposed to doing work in school, I would sit at the back of the class and, you know, draw out gameplay type situations from the Sunday prior. So yeah, big passion, of course, spending most of my adolescence or young adolescence in Italy.
That's a beautiful story. I mean, I think that speaks to volumes to so many different people. Now, moving over to the games that we had this past weekend, we just came off the international break, Rocco. What were your thoughts about the their performances against Armenia, against Finland, and just an overall, overall grade of their performances over the weekend?
Well, in my view, Mancini had a tall order in that he had to play two teams. Both games are away from home in September when the Italian league is lazily getting going. You know, while in England they're, I think, in week four or so, or week three, I was already down, or actually four. I think it's been four games. In Italy, we've August is a time to almost experiment with soccer still, and they haven't. And of course, as a result, the players are hardly in good physical form and able to sustain good play as a result. So we knew that that Mancini was going to have a tough time in both Armenia and as well in Finland. And just to exacerbate the issue, we had two teams where most of the players of Finland and Armenia have played for quite a bit longer. In Armenia, for example, we're looking at it's basically mid-season over there, and you saw that in some of the physical play there. You know, Italy suffered the first in both games. In the first bunch of minutes, Italy was probably not the best team, not the best side, and of course. This made sense because Armenia and Finland both wanted to show the home crowd, a good time and surprise them, right? And in fact, you saw that happen with Armenia scoring going ahead. Luckily, our talent shined through as the game wore on. And what matters the most at this point, despite the fact that the bubbly gameplay that we saw in March and in June under the tutelage of Mancini, all this great, big praise that Mancini's team received over that period, and over right at the end of the Nations League, that gameplay is still yet to be seen. But in the meantime, what I was trying to say was the most important thing is that Italy was able to get all 6 points, six out of six available points, and basically has a foot already in Euro 2020 qualification.
Rocco, one thing I want to touch upon is the fact that you mentioned how Finland and Armenia, they obviously looked more informed than Italy, and they obviously gave, I criticized it before, but you mentioned it well, that they kind of gave us a very hard time. Do you think the lack of having a lack of Chiellini in the back line is also a big reason of that, or do you feel like as if Chiellini's absence wasn't that felt from them?
I think that Chiellini might have been able to close out one or two kind of chances, but I don't think that one single player makes that much of a difference. Even if he is a fuoriclasse, a world class player in that position, like Chiellini is, to be completely honest. And also, if we look at how the goals matured, the goals that Italy conceded matured. The one in Finland was, and excuse the term, a bit of a boneheaded play by Florenzi, naively fouling a Finnish player there. I think it was Pukki, and it's something that could have been very well avoided. So, if anything, perhaps. And dare I say it, De Sciglio's injury was key, and Emerson's injury were key, and that's why eventually Florenzi was brought on in that sense. The central defenders, maybe in the goal against Armenia, showed a little bit of of naivety there as well with Bonucci and Romagnoli letting the Armenian player right through there. So, but you know, it looks like all's well that ends well, and you know, we'll shovel those 6 points away and think about good, you know, playing well and playing pretty later.
In conversation with Rocco Fasano on the Calcio Guys on CJO 6090. CJO, by the way, is hosting his funding drive until September 22nd. Head to CJOfundingDrive.com to find out about the events we're hosting, about a raffle, and how to donate. I got to ask you, Rocco, looking at Federico Bernardeschi, he hasn't played that much for Juventus. He played both games this weekend for Italy. I mean, how did you see his play considering this is pretty much his first two games of the season?
Yeah, Bernardeschi is somebody who needs, who definitely this year is going to be someone. Let's just put it this way: it's going to be his make it or break it here. I mean, he's had a few opportunities, a few kicks at the can now under Allegri, and who, among other things, also played him as a mezzala a few times at the beginning of last season, and then he fizzled out. It's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be the player that is going to shine through this year. I may you know, make it a bit of an early call right now and say that, you know, his fortunes will have to rest on how well Douglas Costa does at Juventus. And of course, you know, he's going to need a rest once in a while, and Costa's going to need a rest once in a while, and therefore Bernardeschi will have to come up and step up and step into that play and be ready to be decisive, be ready to make a difference, be a difference maker. At this point, I'm not left with a distinct impression that that's going to happen, but I definitely look forward to being proven wrong by the former Fiorentina man.
So, talking about a current Fiorentina man, Federico Chiesa, one of us here, well, especially Gianni.
Nice segue.
Yeah, exactly. I had to. He praises Chiesa a lot. I mean, I think he's one of our better talents for the Italian national team. What do you think about him, his play this international break, and just him as a player now and for the future?
Also another one who's had a bit of a struggling August. Let's put it that way. The only alibi he has, though, is that he's played in the under 21 tournament and got quite a bit of playing time there. So hopefully, for his sake, he'll be able to turn it around. I don't know how much the rumor mill will have an impact on Chiesa's performance this year, because. Speaking of Rocco's, you mentioned two Rocco's, the first the singer and now me, and the third Rocco I'll mention is Comiso, Rocco Comiso. He made a promise not to sell Chiesa, and he kept that promise throughout the summer window. However, it remains to be seen how much the malcontent of Chiesa from not being sold, not moving on, not making that bigger contract, how much that will have an impact on his gameplay. I suspect as a consummate professional, we're still going to see a very strong Federico Chiesa. And I think he's just going to have to come into his own. There's a lot of moving parts at Fiorentina this year with the advent of Boateng, with the advent of Ribery, Lirola, etc. There's a lot of, and then of course Montella coming into the mix, new ownership. Is one's left with the impression that they are still in the storming phase before, you know, they start to form and eventually perform.
A little fun question right now following up from that. So your username is Catenaccio NA.
Correct.
So what's the history behind that name?
so there's a bit of a history, and there's a history and a metamorphosis included in that as well. So I started a little blog that could back in 2013 called, of course, Catenaccio NA. And at the time, just serendipitously, I Catenaccio was not available, and the reason why just Catenaccio wasn't available, and the reason why I wanted to use Catenaccio was because it's one of the few English words in the English vernacular few English words that ended up forming part of the footballing vernacular that comes from Italian. Sorry, yeah, it's an Italian word that formed part of the English vernacular. I got that straight, finally. Sorry, guys.
No problem. It's all good.
So I took that, and I wanted to make that my blog name, but it was taken. So I decided, I said, you know what, I'm going to take a bit of a North American bend anyway, and I wanted to, tell the story about the Italian football communities in North America, that were part of the Italian footballing movement, whether you're an Azzurri fan only or whether you support club and country, you're from Montreal or Toronto or New York or Miami or L.A. or Chicago, wherever. And I wanted to tell those stories about those clubs and those fan clubs. And if you dig very deep in the beginning of my blog, which you'll find at catenaccio.na.blogspot.com, you'll see some of those interviews with club presidents from Milan Club Philadelphia, from Juventus Club in New York City, etc. So we will see those. You'll see that kind of stuff. But eventually, it started to evolve, and I expanded my horizons. I successfully was granted media accreditation at a Juventus game in Turin when I was visiting Italy once, and for several seasons now I've held media accreditation at Toronto FC. I've also covered Team Canada games and CONCACAF tournaments and whatnot. So as a result, it's taken a metamorphosis, as I mentioned earlier, whereby from Catenaccio North America, it just became not Catenaccio, not applicable. Right?
Absolutely.
Why not applicable? It's not applicable because in the meantime, not only have I evolved, but also Italian football has evolved. From 2013 and probably even before, Italy had stopped playing Catenaccio for a long time. And, Catenaccio is kind of a past tactic, footballing tactic, right? So and Italy is now playing, as we mentioned in passing here, more attacking, bubbly football nowadays. So, and that's I think quite apropos for me to have changed my my name and my blog name to Catenaccio Not Applicable.
Perfect. That's amazing, Rocco.
We really appreciate having you on.
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Ciao.
Anyways, you're listening to the Calcio Guys on CGO 6090. Coming up, Serie A Match Day 3 predictions.
Welcome to the kitchen, man. Take your order, please.
I'll have two number nines, a number nine large, a number six with extra dip, a number seven, two number 45s.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. This ain't that type of kitchen. This is what we got.
I keep a witch, in my kitchen. I keep a stick,
Tune in every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on CJLO 6090 AM with DJ NMK and Big Say LaRoff for the hottest mixes of rap and R&B in the city.
You gotta eat to keep your strength up, man.
Are you looking to take the next step in your education? Well, learn about undergraduate and postgraduate programs, professional degrees and doctorates, as well as work abroad, language travel, and internships at the Study and Go Abroad Fair on Thursday, October 3rd at the Palais de Congrès de Montréal. Admission is free. For more information, check out our website, www.studyandgoabroad.com.
Satisfy your sweet tooth and support your local radio station by coming out to CJLO's Funding Drive Bake Sale. Taking place in the SB Building Atrium on Concordia's Loyola campus, there will surely be enough sweet treats for everyone. Come out on Wednesday, September 18th from 12 to 4 p.m. We'll also be selling CJLO merch and raffle tickets, with all proceeds going towards station upgrades and initiatives. For more information on our funding drive and our many killer events happening between September 9th to the 22nd, visit cjlofundingdrive.com. CJLO 1690 AM, from the underground to the airwaves.
We have the students on the run. And as children finish school, we will continue helping them to gamble their lives and futures on drugs.
This is CJLO.
Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Calcio Guys with Gianni Del Colli, Adriano DiNardo. I'm Nicholas DiGiovanni. So City have match day 3 coming up, but before we do that, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Europa League starts next week. We didn't really get the chance to talk about it the past 2 weeks. So looking at the Italian teams, at least in the Champions League. So Atalanta's in Group C with Dinamo Zagreb, Manchester City and Shakhtar Donetsk. Juventus, Group D, Atletico, Bayern, Leverkusen, and Lokomotiv Moscow. Group E, Genk, Liverpool, Napoli, and Salzburg. And Group F, Barcelona, Dortmund, Inter, Slavia, Praha. Looking at these groups for the Italian teams, who do you think is going to go through to the round of 16?
That's a tough question. I think just looking at it on paper, I think obviously Inter got the hardest group out of the four teams. I think the obvious favorites to get out is going to be Juventus. I think probably Juventus and probably Napoli. I think Atalanta could have a chance. Obviously, I think City are the favorites in that group, but I think Atalanta can do some damage against the other teams as well. So for me, the ones on paper that should go through, Juventus, Napoli, Atalanta for me has a chance. Inter, it's going to be a tougher road. They probably still do have a chance, but it's going to just be a tougher road to get out.
I expect Inter and Juve to win their groups, and I expect Napoli and Atalanta to finish second. Atalanta's group themselves, they can be underappreciated, I guess, and they could probably steal a couple of games like that.
Yeah.
Whereas Napoli themselves, if they win those key games versus Genk and Salzburg, they can easily finish second. Mind you, I didn't expect them to beat Liverpool last year, and they did win the first game against them. They lost the second game against them, and it was only a 1-0 loss too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, even though Liverpool very very much dominated that game, Napoli still kind of showed a bit of effort. I'm just feeling as if that Napoli, the only ways that they don't finish second is if they shoot themselves in the foot.
Which they did last year.
Yeah. I feel like that's their story of every Champions League.
Agreed.
Unfortunately.
They always screw themselves over. So in terms of Champions League, I feel like as if Juve and Inter should win their groups, whereas because Inter is like a whole different monster this year. And Napoli Atalanta should finish second.
Interesting.
I think it's obviously going to be tough for Inter, but I think they could one-up Dortmund. Obviously, it's going to be tough to beat Barcelona. They were in a tough group last year, but last year they were still coached by Spalletti. It was their first time in the Champions League in about 6-7 years. Under Conte, they're going to do better, I say. They're not going to be beat by Slavia Praha. It's just going to come down to their games against Dortmund. It's as simple as that. Napoli, like you said, if they shoot themselves in the foot. Salzburg, they played them last year in the Europa League, actually, round of 16. They beat them 4-3 on aggregate. They actually beat them 3-0 in the first leg and then went to Salzburg and lost 3-1. So it was closer than they would have expected, but I don't think they're going to allow themselves to play like that in the Champions League. Juventus, you know what, it's not the easiest of groups, but it's not the hardest either. Atletico Madrid without Antoine Griezmann. This is the team they beat a couple of months ago. I know it's different season, different stage too, but I'd say Juventus should win in their group. And then Atalanta probably had the best case in scenario considering their pot four. You know, to go in a group with Man City, obviously, is going to be tough. But Dinamo Zagreb and Shakhtar Donetsk, those are two teams that I think they're beatable for Atalanta. I'm not saying they're going to beat them.
I think,
but they're not going to be embarrassed by them. Those are going to be really good games. It's wide open for that number two spot.
Yeah. And I feel like as if Atalanta has Duván Zapata, who's getting way more comfortable than he was before. Imagine last year he had a phenomenal season. I think that was his breakthrough season. Now he knows he's good. Very confident guy. He's able to put those goals in.
I think also with the addition, obviously the experience of Papu Gomez and Ilicic, I think can shine as well.
They definitely are going to be going in with a chip on their shoulder, and they're not just going to show that last season was a fluke for them offensively. They want to show that they are a team that is capable of playing in Champions League. I'm not saying they're going to be those teams that are going to contend for a quarterfinal or semifinal spot, but they're like, you know what, we can make it past the group stage at least, and that's a statement and a half for Atalanta.
And in the Europa League, it's kind of too hard to predict since most of the teams we don't really know. But in Group E, there's Lazio with Celtic, Stade Rennes, and CFR Cluj. And then Group J, Roma is with Borussia Mönchengladbach, Istanbul, and Wolfsberg. Not Wolfsburg, Wolfsberg, whose stadium is currently filled by trees. That is no joke. Look that up. Wolfsberg Europa League Stadium. There's trees on the field. They're going to have to play at a different stadium. Serie A match day 3. It felt like it was too long since the Serie A was being played. I hate the international break that way. Especially 2 weeks into the season. You're just getting the taste.
Yeah.
And then it's taken away from you. Like, imagine Nonna gives you a nice plate of pasta.
We didn't get to the pasta. We had just had the appetizer, and then we didn't even get to the pasta.
We just had the salad.
Just had the fried...
Lante pasta, and then we didn't even get to
the pasta. We had the fried zucchini, and that's it.
Exactly.
No pasta yet, and it's taken away from you.
And I'm salivating here like it's crazy.
We're finally in our main meal.
Yep.
There's going to be, I think, 4 or 5 matches until the next international break. Some good games this weekend. Fiorentina-Juventus, Napoli-Sampdoria. Genoa-Atalanta, surprisingly, might be a good game.
I like that one.
Spal-Lazio, too. Maybe. Roma-Sassuolo. But Roma, 0 wins. They have to win this one.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm actually not thinking that they're going to actually come out with a win. That's Sassuolo, I believe, won last week. It's been a while. Let me double check. Yeah, they did win 4-1 versus Sampdoria. It's true. Berardi got a hat-trick. Yeah, so...
it's been too long, eh?
My mind's all fazy. But so Sassuolo themselves are not a terrible team either. So I honestly think that it's actually going to be a 1-1 draw for those two.
Yeah, I mean, I like the game. I like the matchups. I like that you mentioned the Genoa-Atalanta game. I think that game could be an actual better game than people would expect, especially you know how Genoa has been playing and Atalanta as well. The worrisome one again is I'm going to go back to the Fiorentina Juve in this particular case. They got in the start of the season not really the way they wanted with the Napoli and Genoa game. Now facing obviously the defending champions in Juventus, it's not going to be an easy task. I would hope for a result for them there. I just don't see it. But if they can squeeze out a draw, I think they'll be more than happy. A win would just be, you know, a dream. So for me, I'm still, you know, it's still worrisome for Fiorentina to start off the season with, you know, 3 tougher matchups. But between that one and then the Genoa-Atalanta game, I like that you definitely mentioned that.
For Fiorentina, they are in a tough spot because they play the first game of the season against Napoli.
Yeah.
Go to Genoa, lose both games, and now they have to play Juventus. As you said last week, you are disappointed in their start of the season. They could have a crazy bounce back with a draw or a win, but the way they've been playing, I don't see that happening, especially the way their defense has been playing. The same thing for Sampdoria's defense. Against this Napoli team, just get ready for a goal fest.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yep.
I could see this finishing as a 6-0 game, and I won't be surprised.
I was expecting a high scoring game, but I wasn't going for 6.
Yeah, 6. I mean, that would be a dream.
I mean, I was going for like maybe a 3-goal effort from Napoli, but I wasn't going to go for 6. But you know what? Hey, if they score 6, I'll be happy with that. I'm not going to complain either.
For sure.
Pad up those stats. Why not?
Exactly. I think Sam can get a bit more of their offense going. I think their defense will still be at a bit of a loss. Personally, I can see like a 4-2 game, maybe Quagliarella getting on the board against obviously his former team and
the hometown team.
Hometown team, exactly. So
also his former team. He's not wrong with that.
Yeah, no, both.
They were.
Said and hometown team.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you said. I thought you said or. Never mind.
Yeah.
Anyways, continue. Misunderstood that one.
It's okay. From the English teacher. No, that's just a shot at Johnny. No.
Wow.
I love Johnny. I love Johnny. But no, I think you get on the board. I just, as you said, their defense is very, very worrisome, which I'm surprised about. They added Murillo, as I said last week. I think that which has the experience and I thought would be a better addition for their defense, but clearly not. So I think Napoli should definitely take that game.
And Adriano's Milan goes to Verona. Everybody loves watching a game at the Bentegodi. That's not true.
No, that nobody says that ever.
Anyways, thanks for listening this week. Tune in next week as the Serie A is finally in full swing. And so is the Calcio guys here on CJO 6090. Thanks for listening.
Ciao. Thanks, guys. Bye.
You're listening to CJ.